Hello, and welcome to the Full Circle Healing Podcast, where we merge modern cutting-edge science with traditional healing wisdom and everything in between to help you come full circle back to your original natural state of health and well-being. I'm your host, Michael, and over the past 15 years, I've helped hundreds of thousands of people find the information, practices, tools, resources, and experts they needed to find their way back to optimal health. Our guest in this episode is my friend and women's health expert, Bree Weiselman. Bree is the founder and clinical director of Bree Weiselman Integrative Health, a leading clinic that has been at the forefront of functional and integrative medicine since 2007. With over 20 years of clinical experience, Bree has been a trailblazer in the online paleo and functional medicine telehealth space, serving clients worldwide via internet since 2012, which is much longer ago than I would think it is. Her expertise lies in hormone balance, fertility optimization, and anti-aging strategies with a particular focus on digestive health. Bree's innovative reverse age method empowers women to take control of their health, addressing the root causes of hormonal imbalances and promoting lasting vitality. In this essential episode for women, you'll be learning why perimenopause is the perfect time to reset your health for the decades ahead and how to do it, how to naturally prevent the drastic hormone crashes that drive inflammation and aging, why lifting weights is the secret weapon for metabolic health and longevity, and how to get started, and how to shift from fixing problems to building long-term health and resilience, and why that mindset change means everything, and a lot more, including important information about the safe use of bioidentical hormones. If hormones are your jam, head over to rebelhealth.co/hormones, and you'll find an in-depth training from microbiologist Kiran Krishnan on the gut microbiome hormone axis we talk about in this episode. So let's get started with Bree. Hey, Bree, welcome to the podcast.
Hey, Mike. I'm glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, I feel like we were just here. We just recorded a presentation for our hormone masterclass, like, I don't know, not that many days ago. Time isn't real. So I think it was like a week ago, maybe. It was earlier this week, I think.
I think so. Yeah.
So anyways, it doesn't matter because they're airing at different times. So anyways, welcome back. And these conversations are always really fun. And for the ladies here and men who want to learn about ladies, you're probably in for a treat, because I think one important aspect of women's health and hormones is the fact that the men in their life often know nothing and understand nothing about them. So that leads to a whole bunch of other side issues. But we're going to talk about hormones. We're going to talk about perimenopause, we're going to talk about gut health, and we're going to talk about how those things all kind of wrap together, right? And so when we first connected, you had a primary focus. You were talking a lot about gut health and hormones, and then your business kind of pivoted or shifted a little, and now your primary focus, at least forward-facing, is on perimenopause and helping women through perimenopause. But that's not really a different thing, is it?
No, they're essentially the same systems, because it's just how human bodies work and how we break and how, and really when we look at the, it just kind of, looking at like, hey, are we fixing a problem or are we getting proactive about a solution for how we want to feel and how we want to, what experience we want to have? And I think my whole life took a turn around that theme around this time for many reasons, circumstantial. And so I got really excited about like, hey, yeah, okay, it's great to know, like, when something doesn't feel good, how do we make it better? How do we help people have a better life? How do we help them feel better in their bodies? But now I'm excited about saying, you know, hey, let's rewrite this story that there's like, you know, that whole over the hill mentality. Like, okay, now we have this slow, gradual downhill slide.
Everything has to hurt. I can't remember anything. I'm going to feel all weird all the time.
Yeah. And for women, it's also like, and I become invisible and irrelevant and less valid, invalidated in some way, because I'm no longer these things that society, you know, says. And so we're trying to like, I mean, there's a whole just movement online that I'm loving about just reconceptualizing all of that story. But part of it definitely is looking at what's actually going on with our physiology in women and how do we become empowered to make choices around, you know, moving in a pathway of health and longevity, which is for me like play span and well span. I don't really care how long I'm here as long as it's good. And I mean, I do care how long I'm here. Let's, you know, be clear. But I mean, I want to be here to be here and present and enjoying that and engaged with it. And I think we all want that. So I want to promote that. I'm excited about helping people get that if they want it and explaining all the different options they have in order to do that. And we have so many tools. We have so many tools available to us now, more than ever.
I love the reframing of fixing problems or moving towards the life we want. That's a different thing. And I'm just wrapping up, actually, the same day we're recording this, a Build Your Resilient Gut course that we're doing with Kiran Krishnan. And he talks a lot about you want to do the things that build the resilience and build the health in the gut and look at it that way. And like, what do I need to do that? And less about like, let's kill this thing, let's kill this thing, let's kill this thing, let's go after this thing, let's fix this problem. It's like, if you do X, Y, Z things that build health and resilience, a lot of those things tend to take care of themselves. And that's not saying we don't need to do like some interventions at some point to get things kind of unstuck or moving in a better direction. But I think there's a huge like energetic and emotional and mental shift when you go from like, I have all these things wrong with me that I need to fix to, oh, all that stuff is really good for me to do. And I'm going to feel good when I do that stuff. I'm going to do that stuff. Like, that's a way different.
It's a whole different paradigm. You go from the victim to the creator. Mm-hmm. And basically, instead of being defensive, and this is like so, we can extrapolate that to like so many parts of life, but in health, it's like waiting until there's a problem and going, this crap happened to me. Okay, well, maybe I'm empowered about it. I'm going to do something about it. But it's like, ugh, I'm at the effect of this thing. Versus, how am I setting myself up for the best opportunities possible?
And taking action before the problems are like...
Yeah, exactly.
Really entrenched. I think that's part of our culture too, is like not taking action on something or not changing something until the wheels have fallen off and the light's on and the engine is smoking and the car is on fire and like whatever. And I've been guilty of that too. Like I just yesterday took an action for myself. I have hemochromatosis. And for anybody out there who doesn't know what that is, I have elevated ferritin and it can cause a lot of problems. Like it can cause early mortality, heart problems, liver problems, kidney problems, depression, joint pain, all kinds of things. And I think because I've taken good care of myself the last 10, 15 years, like I changed my life and do all this healthy stuff, I don't have a ton of the like normal consequences of that condition, which you normally would around my age. And I found out about it like 15 years ago that I had this. And I read all this like really scary stuff, like it causes this, 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 and this, which is true because elevated iron is like really oxidative damaging, causes all kinds of problems. It causes blood viscosity. It's like all kinds of issues. And the only way to lower it is by phlebotomy and like essentially like donating blood. I have a horrific phobia of needles and blood draws and that. So it's like literally the worst condition I could have. Like I'd rather have like the medicine for my sickness be like, you have to wake up in the morning and get kicked in the shin for an hour every day. And I would be like, sweet, I'm in, I'll do it. But I put off doing this for 15 years because I didn't have the symptoms. Like I didn't have the problems. There was no like stick hitting me like the carrot and the stick. And yesterday I did my first phlebotomy. I didn't pass out this time, which is a first, and I did good. And I'm taking proactive steps. I did my genetics with Dr. Bob Miller, who's really good with genetic stuff, and he found a bunch of things. And I'm taking proactive steps to reduce the iron and get the iron down before I have liver failure, kidney damage, or some other kind of like thing. And it's probably the first time I've ever done something like that. And I think that that's kind of an aside from what we're talking about of shifting the focus, but like taking actions to optimize and feel good without having to feel super shitty first, right?
Yes.
I think that was too long-winded of a way to explain that, but like that's basically it. Like when you still feel kind of okay, there's a way better than okay.
Like, that's how we always did everything, though. I mean, if you look at like all the ancient medicines, Chinese medicine, Ayurveda, they didn't wait till someone was falling apart. They were reading the tongues, the pulses, the signs.
Yeah, like this is slightly off. This is off a little bit.
Let's nudge in this direction before we get too crazy, because way harder to get things out of the ditch than it is to just nudge them back to center. And I think I point the finger of blame. If I'm going to point the finger of blame, like I like thinking about things this way. Like we could blame ourselves or we could just take responsibility. And those are two sides of the same coin, right? So it's not our fault that we do this. I blame this on, you know, isolation. Basically, like, we don't live in communities anymore, which I think is the biggest driver of pathology period.
I agree.
And that's a whole, I mean, we could have a 4-hour conversation about that. But what I mean is there were things that were demonstrated and role modeled to us that we normalized. It wasn't even a thing that you had to do. Like, I don't self-care. They didn't have a word for self-care. This was just what you did. Like, you ate, you know, 200
grams. That word got invented like 15 years ago. And then half of the things that they use it with are nonsense.
They're ridiculous. It's just like shit you should be doing anyway that you would have done 200 years ago because everyone around you just did it, right? So, yeah. Like, did this, you know? And so, that word is a result of the pathology of what I'm talking about. But basically, it's like, you know, if you're part of the Hadza tribe, you don't self-care. You just, like, you're eating 200 grams of fiber and you're moving while you're eating, you know, and you're eating the bulk of your calories in the beginning of the day and all these things that we, and you're lifting heavy things because you have to like do the things that the village needs to live. And none of that is prescriptive. It's just life. And so like a lot of the things that we now are working on, like, oh, okay, now I have to do this stuff. It's because like we had to have something go wrong so that we could even figure out like, I need to look for an answer to this when before it would have been headed off beforehand.
And then doing this stuff is harder.
It's harder because we're on.
And then it feels more daunting and more overwhelming. Like I have a friend who's a practitioner who was bedridden with severe chronic pain, multiple autoimmune conditions, all kind of crazy symptoms, but nerve pain severe for, I think he said 17 years he was bedridden, and he's healed himself. And now he works with super complex, really, really sick, tons of pain, difficult people. And he'd say their exercise to start the program is like, get up from the chair and sit back down in the chair.
Yeah.
And then maybe do that again. And then tomorrow do it like 3 times. And that's hard. Then doing the things is hard. And if you're out there and you're in that state, I'm not trying to like make it seem easier to get out of there. We're kind of trying to encourage the folks who aren't quite in that state to start the things without all the flashing lights being on.
Yeah,
because the more flashing lights that are on, the harder it is to do the things. But when we did, I was a producer on the Human Longevity Project film series like a bunch of years ago, and the filmmakers went to a lot of places to interview folks that were like 95 to 100, over 100. This little Italian guy showed up on his bike. He was 104. And they were trying to get the questions they originally were asking these people are questions that come from like our Western modern mindset of like, what exercise do you do? And what is your like diet like? And what are these like? And they're like, what do you mean? And they're like, what kind of exercise like do you work out? And they're like, do you want to come out in the yard? I'm going to go pick fruit. And these little ladies like climbed up these trees and were picking fruit. And they're like 97 years old. And they're giving fruit to our guys confused about what exercise means. Because it's like, no, it's not a thing you go do. It's a thing you like are. Like it's just part of it. And that's not blaming people for not doing it. We've created like a,
yeah,
their life is different than most people. Don't have fruit trees. Most people have to go sit in an office or sit in a car or do like these really unnatural things or stare at this all day or, you know, something. So we're not blaming you, but it's ways to kind of reintroduce a lot of these like life affirming, vitality increasing things, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes. And it's how we position ourselves to your point, like, we're not blaming you. It's about, but we don't have to take the blame, but we do get the opportunity to take responsibility.
Yeah.
That's a choice. And so like when we have these conversations, like sometimes like the stuff I talk about, which is like, you know, bioidentical hormones are the most powerful tool we have to promote health as we age. End of sentence, period. That doesn't mean that should be the end of story. And then I start talking about, and these other body systems play a role. And sometimes people are like, oh God, I just, you know, and there's a contraction. It's like, I have to do all this stuff. Like all of a sudden it becomes like, oh God, overwhelming. And it doesn't have to be because so much of it is lifestyle related and just moving in a direction. But like, if we can reframe things as like, hey, I have the opportunity to choose this. And then it becomes this thing that you're empowered to do versus like us, you know, shooting on ourselves. So I don't know.
Like, you get to do it. Like,
you get to do it. If
there's
you want.
People like Christopher is the name of that guy I was referencing, the practitioner who was really sick for a long time. And he said, like, I love to work out and exercise and lift weights now so much because I never thought I'd be able to do it. Like I used to sit and like blinking my eyes caused pain. And so like to be able to, he does climbing on the,
like
the climbing gym type climbing, you know?
Yeah.
And whatever. And it's like, I can do this.
Yeah.
And so I'm going to do this. And I think we lose that, like, I don't know whether to call it like awe or wonder that we have this thing that can do all this stuff, and everything becomes like, ugh, I have to do this, or I have to eat this really healthy food that's going to make me feel really good. I have to, you know, do these things. And I get it. Like, people are tired, people are exhausted, people are overwhelmed. But it's like you start making those decisions and then they get easier and then you feel better. Yeah. And then you're like, then there is the carrot instead of having the stick, like of the carrot stick reference.
Oh my God.
Like,
great metaphor.
Yeah. Like, then there's the carrot. Of like, I feel better while I'm doing this stuff. I'm going to keep doing this stuff. But you got to get the ball, like,
you got to get
moving
it rolling
a little. And whether that's like improving your sleep or whether it's, you know, working on your gut health, what were you going to say?
Sometimes we just need to carve out enough space for people to feel a little bit better or have enough of a win or enough of a success that then they can adopt all the other things. Then they can do the rest of the work. So an example of this that I'm seeing highlighted in society today is like the conversation about like GLP-1s, right? That is heated. People are like, this is amazing. This is a miracle. Other people are like, we just should be making it in the gut. Why are we injecting people? And other people are like, we're hitting people over the head with high doses. Use microdose. And other people are like, this is wrong in theory because people just need diet and lifestyle. And like all of those people have valid points, right? Like I don't even need to have the conversation about what I think. But basically, it's like something I have seen is that sometimes people's metabolisms are so messed up and they feel so awful and they're so stuck and they're so frustrated that if you kind of like at least get them a win, then all of a sudden that's like self-perpetuating the like, oh, now I lost 20 pounds and actually when I work out, it feels a lot easier and better. And now I'm going to I want to do that. What can I do now? And I literally see people do this. And so it's kind of like you could argue that a million ways, you know, cart before the horse or the carrot or the stick. It's like sometimes people just need a little bit of help to carve out some space and bandwidth to be able to do the things and to position themselves to it. As like, this is empowering and I'm choosing this, right? Like if we're just stuck. So I want the name of your pain guy though, so I can refer to him. He sounds awesome.
Yeah, I will. He's pretty incredible. Like it's the most remarkable healing story I've ever heard, and I've heard a lot of them. So it should be like a movie.
But it really should. I'm like, I want to hear his story. I want to watch his story.
So with the women you work with is primarily focused on perimenopause now. And since I just recorded like 18 presentations for a hormone summit, I'm pretty well versed on perimenopause, at least way more than I was a few months ago. So these women probably have had some fluctuating weight, some fluctuating energy or energy decreases, maybe like changes to skin, hair, maybe difficulty focusing or mood or anxiety, depression, sleep problems on top of like the mental, emotional aspects of shifting to being what you referred to as either invisible or not important or et cetera, et cetera. So when they're feeling like that ball of not really excited to jump into doing a whole bunch of things right away, or like maybe easily overwhelmed or whatever, where do you start, or what are like the biggest needle movers, or is that individual or?
That's a great question. So I do kind of systematize it because all the pieces work together, but I definitely start with nutrition and lifestyle and there's some very specific things that I mean by that. It's not like a generic term. Unless someone's like so exhausted or so struggling with like, you know, they're like hemorrhaging half the month, bleeding, or some like emergency state, or like they're like severely depressed because of the hormone shift. Like there's certain things that we would have to deal with first before getting someone in the moment of the nutrition and lifestyle stuff. But what I mean by nutrition and lifestyle is that the backbone of all the programs I do is that unless someone literally cannot for some reason, I get people on a nutrition plan that is, you know, it's going to like really omit processed foods for the most part, like 99%. It's going to be higher protein than most women think they need or have been consuming in the past historically.
That came up a lot in the Hormone Masterclass.
Yeah. So, I mean, without doing a whole segment on that, and I mentioned it in the class, but my target for most people is 1 gram of protein per pound of target body weight, or slightly more, depending on how aggressively you're muscle building. And everyone has, there's genetic individuality in that too. So I'll look at the genetics sometimes, because like I'm somebody who needs a like ridiculous amount of protein based on my genetics. But other people don't need quite as high as I need. So like there is some variability there. And then eating, you know, a glycemically neutral diet. And a lot of time that looks like me educating women about like, hey, we're not going to demonize whole food groups. Like it's not carbs bad, protein good. Like get that out of your head. But let's use our carbohydrates as a tool, because what are carbs? Carbs are what the body uses for energy. We all need carbs to thrive. So it's about choosing when you use them and how we use them. And we can look at like evolutionary societies for like the game book, the playbook. It's eat them earlier in the day. It's eat them while you're moving. You know, don't eat them at night before you go to bed. That's it. It's pretty simple. So we keep things simple and get women eating in that way, and really, really, really just adding as much above ground vegetable matter as humanly possible. It's a lot of food. The thing I hear consistently is, oh my God, how am I going to eat this much food? You know, so nobody's hungry. No one's deprived. No one needs to snack. Or like we actually, anyway, that's a, there's different ways we do that. But food is important. And that sometimes just that change before we do anything else revolutionizes like how like mood stability and a lot of the brain fog and a lot of the energy and also the body composition stuff starts to change sometimes before we've done anything else. And then to that, the other essential ingredient is you and I have like expressed our like undying love for lifting heavy things, right? So I don't particularly care how someone achieves that, but I do think that like if people have never, I was someone who was like, I'm a dancer, I was like a Pilates and bar teacher, like I like those kind of things, but like I was definitely one of those people who was like, ew, gyms, gross. Like, I don't want to do that. And I'm like so 180 now. I'm just like, oh my God, like, if I don't get to lift heavy things one day, I kind of like, I'm just, my head's on not quite right as it is on the days I do. It's like mental health and spiritual health and physical health and all the things. So I get women addicted to lifting heavy things and get them away from a fear that they're going to like start bulking or any of that, and really realize that muscle is medicine and that it just cannot come in a jar. There's nothing else we can do. There are tools I've recently found out about that are very cool for people who, for whatever reason, are like, I have an injury or I just came out of a surgery and I like cannot do that, that are so cool. There's something called Katsu that I just learned about, and someone probably knows more about this, but they're basically ways of stimulating the muscle groups without having to create like body strain that can maintain muscle mass. And I am like so excited to learn more about that right now.
Interesting.
The name of the game for longevity, which is really like perimenopause, is the window, the doorway I use. And those things that you named that women want to see not like suddenly fall apart or change before their eyes and how they feel. But ultimately, it's about like how long, how good do we get it for how long, right? And so the name of the game for that is like almost to the point where you can get away with like so many things you shouldn't. I don't even want to tell people that, but like is how much muscle you have, you know? So like, for example, like the epidemic of diabetes and prediabetes and metabolic syndrome, people think
down.
Problem of too much fat or like carbs and sugar. Yes. Okay. Those things come into play. It's actually a problem of under muscling. So like I'm a woman with polycystic ovarian syndrome. My number one, I have two tools that are my number one and two tools for treating PCOS now, which is basically put on as much muscle as possible because we're going to radically shift your insulin sensitivity, and bioidentical progesterone to reset the signaling of the pituitary to the ovaries. And like, yes, all the other nice things that we do, the inositols and the, you know, diets and the different supplements we can use. But those two are the most potent things
that I've found. Without the muscle, you don't have anywhere where the sugar's going.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah. Without the muscle, we don't have enough mitochondria and we don't have the insulin receptors, especially the leg muscle. You know, that's where we have the most insulin receptors in the whole body. So building that booty and building those legs. And to do that, you need protein. You can't put on muscle without more protein than you think you probably think you need. So there's that. Those are the first two steps. And then the very next thing I do is we talk about hormones, you know, and I use hormones a lot earlier than a lot of people are using hormones with people yet. And some practitioners are. I do them in a very graduated phase. But the truth is that, like, even when I was testing, and this took me years to get, but I'm seeing women you know, 32 years old who are in perimenopause. And there's a number of reasons why I think that is, and it's definitely environmental and stress in the world. But I'm seeing it. So by the time most of my women are like 37, I have yet to really work with someone who is like super hormonally balanced at 37, 40 window. So I often start integrating some level of hormone augmentation at that phase. And then we shift it. There's different needs at like the 4 or 5 different phases of perimenopause and menopausal transition. And so I'm monitoring that and adjusting it as we go, because the needs of a woman change as we go through that whole 15-year window. And what the evidence shows is that the earlier in the perimenopausal window that we catch the hormone slide and support it, 15 and 20 years later, the benefit to preventing measurable bone loss and the like 35% of our gray matter that we'll lose in the brain and cancer risk plummet, as compared to like catching it late where you're like, oh my God, I'm, you know, uncontrollably hot, flashing and miserable and all of those things. Now starting hormone replacement. And neither of those is wrong. Some hormones is better than not, with some caveats, like you and I kind of were discussing before, but earlier is better. And preventing the radical drops that happen, because so much of the pathology we experience and the pro-inflammatory cascades happen not just because of a lower hormone level, but because of the triggers that happen, the turn-on switches for inflammation when we see crashes from high to low in hormones. And so if we can buffer those crashes, we get through with a lot less inflammation and oxidative stress and disease.
It makes a lot of sense. And just between the nutrition stuff and the hormones, I'm guessing that gives them enough of those wins of, hey, I'm feeling better. I have more energy. I'm sleeping better. My mood is better. Not only does it make you want to do more, like what else you got for me, it also makes doing more easier and less overwhelming, and like your capacity to do more. So it kind of, it snowballs in that direction. And like simple things, like you mentioned, like timing the carbs and eating protein. I never realized how drastic screwing up in that regard can be until I moved here to Italy. And when I first arrived, I would see the other students. I was going to language school in the morning, and I would see the other students all at the coffee shop across the street from the school. Because in Italy, breakfast is generally a pastry, an espresso, and like a cigarette. That's pretty much like Italian breakfast. Like they don't eat protein in the morning, and generally. And for a week, my teacher gave me this assignment to learn the different drinks of the coffee shop, because they were appalled that I wasn't able to answer what's my favorite way to order a coffee, because I didn't drink coffee before I moved here. And then I had the assignment, come back next week, tell me which one's your favorite. And she taught me all of them for like an hour and what goes in them and when they're socially acceptable to order. And like, because you can't order things with milk in them in the afternoon. That's like a social faux pas. So like, I went and I drank a coffee drink in the morning and had a pastry, and then would like go to class or go whatever. And by like the third day, I felt like trash garbage. I couldn't focus. My afternoon mood was shot. My sleep went bad. And I was like so rage hungry in the afternoon that I'd eat like way more food than normal, or go like, you know, eat a bunch of like whatever. And it like threw everything off. And I'd never done that before. Like I'd never eaten in that way before. And it took me 3 days of it.
Oh my gosh.
To like completely shift my whole everything with food, with energy, with focus, with whatever. And I was like, I don't know how the hell they do this, but I'm done with it. Like, this is not my jam. Like, I can't do this anymore. And if I eat the protein in the morning and like don't go empty carb calories like that with caffeine on top of it, I could focus. I could survive till lunch or eat lunch later. I had more sustained energy. Like, I didn't feel crashy. And so I don't know if people realize like how massive of a difference those things make. And like what a lot of people are doing in the morning and don't even realize it is something similar to that. Maybe with like an egg or something. And they think, oh, I had protein. I ate an egg. I think an egg is like 6 grams.
Yeah. Or they do oatmeal with fruit.
Yeah. Like which is similar to a pastry kind of. It's a little slower processing, a little less sugar, but like, there's no protein in there.
No, or like yogurt with fruit. That's another one that I love. It's like, it's not that yogurt's bad. Yogurt's great. But like if you, especially if it's
you'd
not
have to eat like a bucket of yogurt to get enough protein.
A bucket of yogurt to get the protein to balance the sugar.
Yeah, then you'd be sick. So then the sugar. So like, yeah, it just makes these huge differences that people don't realize. And even I was deficient in protein when I started paying attention to this. Like, and I ate quite a bit of protein, but it makes a huge shift. And so... Mm. Making those little changes really give you that win of like, hey, I feel better. Hey, I have more capacity.
Absolutely.
And I like how you mentioned it's like not how long people are here. It's like, what can you do while you're here? Like what are those years filled with? And do I want to be like able to enjoy the years where I don't have to work so much maybe, or when I have like grandkids, if that's in your world, or do I want to travel? Like it's funny because here there's a lot of tourists, right? And so in the town I used to live in is very vertical. It's very hilly. And somebody commented to me after about 6 months there, like, wow, the older Americans are so fit. And I was like, what? Because living in Italy, you see like 90-year-olds walking up these hills with their groceries and all these things. And they're like, yeah, but they're so fit. And I thought about this and I'm like, how could you have that impression? And then I looked around and I realized the only ones who came there are fit. Yeah, because you can't, like you wouldn't be able to do it otherwise. And I was like, this is a disproportionate, you're not seeing the... Like, yes, the ones who come here are fit. Do you want to be the one who goes to a town in Tuscany with hills and can walk up the hills? Like, these are things that are choices that you have to make a while before then.
Yeah, exactly. You know? Set yourself up for that.
Yeah. And maybe that's not your thing, but like playing with grandkids, like, you know, playing at the park or being able to do anything, the quality of life to me matters so much more than just being alive. Right?
Like, absolutely.
And so this hormonal support and all these things you're doing in your 30s and 40s, like that really sets women up for like 50s, 60s, 70s that are going to be active, functional, healthy, happy people, right?
Yeah. I mean, it has to do with the fact that like, and there's studies on this, that females, and this is many species, not just humans, when they are not in a stress physiology and when they are relatively healthy, like not in a disease state or not out of balance, they are pleasure seeking. Women are pleasure seeking. And we often use that as our like kind of compass to guide our like our vision of what we're creating for ourselves. So whether that's, and so pleasure can be like literally like when we're talking about perimenopause and menopause, like for sure, like sexual and sensual pleasure. It can also be like just enjoying connecting with friends or traveling or whatever it is you desire, desiring things. And then also it's about like self-actualization, which comes back into focus when we're not so focused on everyone else's needs, which is also a transition that starts to happen in that like 40 to 50 age range, but then, you know, keeps going as like if you were raising kids, they get to a certain state where they don't need you as much. And like, you know, all this, then we're taking care of our parents. But you know what I'm saying is like women at this age start to kind of go, you know, what is this next chapter for me and what do I want? And to even be in touch with that or to have that be something that could come into focus, we can't be doing that while our brain is foggy and we can't sleep and we're like constantly in fight or flight because our vagus nerve dysregulation and we're in sympathetic dominance because of the hormones and the rest of the things that are changing, you know, unsupported. And yeah, so the physiology is part of that, you know, for sure. You know, and something I want to say, though, because like, obviously, I'm a big pro hormones person, but you and I were talking about this, I think it's really important to understand is like, you know, for example, I will not give a woman hormones if she's not like pooping daily. And there's some basics, right? So it's like, yes, hormones, because, you know, bottom line is like, we are healthier when we're in a higher hormone state. So like when we are younger, okay. Like the conversation about hormones and cancer, for example, like hormones don't cause cancer. Now, oxidative stress that can act on how we metabolize those hormones can cause cancer and other diseases, right? But like if hormones cause cancer, then all the women who were pregnant, we would see cancer rates shoot up. We would see cancer in babies that are exposed to high level of hormones. We would see more cancer when you're younger and have high hormones. And we would see cancer rates decline precipitously like once we had low hormone states, aka menopause. That's not what we're seeing, right? And that's true of like pretty much every disease of aging. So or metabolism. So hormones help keep your tissues healthier and then more resilient to disease and more functional and more able to like do cell turnover that's appropriate and appropriate apoptosis and all those things that keep us free from disease and functional. However, if you have high levels of oxidative stress and inflammation in your body and, you know, or your detox pathways aren't working and you are not metabolizing those hormones properly, that absolutely can be adding fuel to the fire. And so something I'm loving that I'm seeing is this pro-hormone movement in the world that, like, for example, Europe has not had this problem, right? Like in the US, we had like the women's health studies that were misinterpreted and a million different problems with those studies and the conclusions drawn. And as a result, we contracted and said, oh my God, hormones cause cancer and heart disease, stop. And a whole bunch of women suffered because of that, generations of women. But like, if you look at Switzerland, they incentivize hormone replacement, you know, because they know that it lowers the burden on their, essentially their Medicare, their socialized medicine system, because when you give women hormones, they get less disease. And it's like, do the math. So they do things like that, right? And a lot of countries in Europe actually do that. And so that's true. But what we should be doing in addition, and what I hope to see kind of become the norm, is not just throw hormones at people, but then we got to be testing the metabolites of what does your body do with those hormones? And is there anything we need to support and adjust there? Because we have all the tools we need to change that. It's not like a set in stone thing at all. It has to do with your gut microbiome and your methylation and liver detox pathways and your oxidative stress and your glutathione status and other antioxidants, all of that stuff. And that's something that we have less of usually in our 20s and 30s than we do when we're 40, 50, and 60, just because of accumulation and time on the planet. So those are the system, and also because those systems do decline if they're not supported as well. So when I think about giving people hormones and helping women feel good and helping women live longer, it cannot stop at hormones. Like, hormones, yes, that's the backbone and the platform. But we have to be doing our work to look at things like the role of the microbes and the role of the antioxidant status and detox pathways and all of that. And some of that is lifestyle, right? Like even just like lifting weights lower is an antioxidant. So like, yes, there's things we can do. But some of that we can use really strategic and specific testing to look at. And then we have tools to change it. Like a lot of times the functional medicine protocols for either a limited period of time, or maybe if one woman needs something longer term to make that more of a beneficial and a lower risk situation, then we can identify that. But I really want to see that conversation happening more and more and more as we're having the like, yay, hormones conversation as well.
I like that. Very responsible take on it. And like, because we have this tendency to be like, oh, that's not good in this situation, so that's bad. Or this is good in this situation, so it's always, so more is better and faster is better and let's do more of that. There's, I think our culture has problem with nuance or like things not being black and white. It's a little bit of this in this context is good. So like a ton of it right now in every context is better, or a little bit of this in this context is bad. So that thing is bad and you should never have that thing and let's burn that thing. Yeah. So I think that we tend to go in that direction. So I love this approach and this discussion. And I think I'm hearing more of it. And I think it's kind of moving in that direction. And that's really interesting about Switzerland.
Actually, it's a lot of the EU.
Well, they're financially incentivized to do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So if the people are healthier, then it costs the system less money and then everybody wins. So, and they're healthier, which is a double win. But I'd like to say the motivations are more altruistic, but it's largely because of money a lot of the time.
It's
and it doesn't
money.
Matter because it's fine. So, all right. Well, thank you so much. Where should people go if they want to learn? Because you work with groups of women, right? You take in...
I do. I work one-on-one. I also have a group program called the Reverse Age Method. The easiest place to interface with me is on my Instagram. I'm very receptive and, you know, we'll chat it up with you on there to a point. There's my website, BreeWeiselman.com. I'm also building out ReverseAgeMethod.com. And so that will soon be kind of the hub for all the anti-aging and reverse aging and perimenopause stuff. But for now, BreeWeiselman.com is a great place to reach me.
Fantastic. Thank you so much, Bree. I always learn a lot and enjoy our chats.
Likewise. Thanks for having me.
All right.